Today is one of the busiest shopping days of the year, Black Friday. Will you stay in the black or go into the red? I am Rob West. With all of the sales hoopla, it's easy to think some deals are just too good to pass up. So out comes the plastic. Today I'll talk with Neely Simon about staying out of credit card debt over the holidays. We're off, so please hold your phone calls. This is MoneyWise on American Family Radio. Biblical wisdom for your financial journey. Well, Neely Simon joins us again today. She's a certified credit counselor with Christian Credit Counselors, an underwriter of this program. And Neely, always great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me on the show, Rob.
I know you get a lot of calls in January, Neely, from folks who are in trouble with credit card debt after holiday spending. And I know you want to help folks avoid that in the first place. But first, this hasn't been a good year for credit card debt, has it?
No, it hasn't. The combination of inflation and interest rates going up has really hit home for many individuals and families. The average household is spending about $500 more on basics, which includes gas, groceries, and utilities. And as a result, many people are relying on the credit cards to pay for some of those basics. According to the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, Americans took on an additional $100 billion in credit card debt this year, with inflation being the contributing factor. And right now, Americans owe nearly $8.9 trillion in credit card debt. So it's definitely growing. Another statistic is from creditcards.com survey, which showed that 60% of Americans with credit card debt have owed it for more than a year. And with the average interest rate being 19% and climbing, if you're carrying a balance month over month on your credit cards, you're paying more. As a certified credit counselor, I'm seeing more clients come to Christian Credit Counselors who are stuck in that cycle with payments and no progress.
Yeah. Well, that is really unfortunate. And we want to obviously get that trend reversed. Inflation's not going away anytime soon. So I know the Ministry of Christian Credit Counselors is really critical. Neely, it's more important than ever to avoid running up credit card debt, specifically during the Christmas shopping season, because of what you just said has been going on this year. So what advice do you have so folks can do just that?
Sure. So what I found is that a lot of people are spending what they make if they're not on a budget. So I would say the first thing you need to do is to set up your budget if you haven't already. And if you do have a budget, revisit it. You know, everything has gone up, so you need to take into account that increase in expenses. Next, determine how much cash you have to spend on Christmas. Make sure you take into account things like gifts, decorations, and entertaining. Yeah. And then stick to the budget. When you're going into the stores, make sure to use cash and don't open up a credit card. I think we all know when we go up to the counter to check out, department stores are always asking, do you want to open up a credit card? Please avoid that, because what you'll end up doing is buying more and mostly things that you can't afford. So if you shop online, use a debit card, not a credit card. Make a list of the people that you want to purchase gifts for and determine how much you want to spend on each of them. And then this one I really enjoy. Where it's appropriate, give homemade Christmas cookies or other baked treats instead of purchasing gifts. Remember, the gift of time is a wonderful reflection of how much you care and love for someone. When you do purchase gifts, do your research on what you want to buy before purchasing, then take advantage of those deals. But remember, it's not a deal if you can't afford it. And then lastly, remind yourself that the Christmas season will be far more enjoyable knowing that you won't get hit with a big credit card bill in January.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's what we need to keep in mind is the payoff that we get from all of this. You know, if we back up and realize that, you know, it's really about keeping Christ at the center and spending time with family and friends. You know, so often, Neely, we get kind of caught up in this trap of maybe one-upping someone with gifts, and that's not what they remember around the Christmas season, is it?
No, not at all. And understand, too, that, you know, when you take on debt, it does create a lot of stress and strain on your relationships, and it doesn't provide you the peace that God really wants you to have, to be generous and to enjoy things in life.
So maybe this is the year to do things a bit differently, to just take a moment and say, what is December going to look like this year and how can I make it different? Coming up after the break, Neely will be back with us to talk about how we can get out of credit card debt if you find yourself in that spot. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Delighted to have you with us today on MoneyWise on American Family Radio. Joining me today is Neely Simon. She's a certified credit counselor with Christian Credit Counselors, an underwriter of this program. Christian Credit Counselors has worked with hundreds and hundreds of our MoneyWise listeners, and they do an incredible job, not only ministering to them and helping them set up a budget and gain peace of mind, but also getting their interest rates reduced so they can get out of debt up to 80% faster. And Neely, I want to talk about that now, because what we have to recognize is that some folks may already be in credit card debt and they just want to know, how do I get out? So how can Christian credit counselors help them?
Sure. So we provide a service called debt management. And what's important to understand is that it's not a consolidation loan and it's not debt settlement. When we set someone up on a plan, we're able to get them out of their credit card debt about 80% faster while still paying off their full balance. The way we do this is that we have pre-negotiated interest rates, terms, and conditions with all the major credit card companies. By lowering the interest rates between 1 and 12%, depending on the creditor, and then snowballing the payments, we offer a long-term solution to becoming debt-free. And finally, clients will pay a lot less interest overall.
Yeah, that's really key. And it's important to remind folks that Christian Credit Counselors is a nonprofit ministry that's guided by biblical principles. So how does that play into the work that you and your team do?
Sure. There's a big difference when you're working with like-minded people who love the Lord, because for us, it's not a transaction. We recognize it's very humbling to reach out and ask for help. We want to learn about your situation, provide solutions, encouragement, education, and prayer.
Yeah, and that's really key, and that really is what makes this a ministry. Let's talk about the mechanics of it. You said that one monthly payment is actually made to Christian Credit Counselors, which means you all handle dispersing the appropriate amount to each of the creditors at these reduced interest rates, and that really is key to being able to access these reduced rates, correct?
Yes, absolutely. So what we offer is a free consultation, which will include a comparison estimate, really outlining how much we can save you on the monthly payment, how much in interest, how much quicker we can get you out of debt, and then also what our monthly service fee is. And then next, we review your finances. We take a look at your income and your expenses, helping you to understand what your margin or disposable income is. And then we also provide solutions when needed to help people get out of the red.
Yeah, and that's really an important part of the process. Talk a bit more about that, Neely, in terms of the work that your team does with each individual to help them work up their spending plan and make sure that it actually balances.
Sure. So part of the consultation is we review the budget with people. We understand what their income and expenses are. We walk through each expense and then offer coaching or counseling when needed. But more importantly, really help them identify like what they value, what their goals are, and how we can get there. And also how we can really serve God and be good stewards of our resources at that same time.
Yeah. And you mentioned how difficult it can be to reach out to someone for help if you're in this difficult situation. And yet, yes, not only does this team, are they ready to receive you and be an encouragement and pray with you, but Neely, talk about the peace of mind that comes with knowing you're actually making progress now, maybe for the very first time, and there's a plan, some intentionality behind this payment you're sending every month instead of just treading water like they perhaps were previously.
Right. I mean, we get a lot of calls or clients reaching out to us, you know, for various different situations, but whether it's making payments and no progress, or whether it's a loss of income, or they didn't receive their bonus, or maybe they had to retire early, it really puts a lot of stress and strain on people having this credit card debt. And it's discouraging because they're looking at their statements and it states they're not going to get out of debt for 20 years on an account that maybe might just have $5,000 or $6,000 as a balance. So what's really great about the work that we do is that we come alongside people. We want to learn about your situation, provide solutions, and also encouragement, really helping people to come up with a long-term solution to getting out of debt and really seeing the light at the end of the tunnel.
Well, in my experience is, Neely, I'd love to get you to weigh in on this, that when we do this monthly and we keep the debts where they are and we build it in our plan and we do the hard work to make that payment every month, which now is at a much lower interest rate, it actually builds the right disciplines so that when we finally get out of debt, we're never going to go back there. Do you see that?
Absolutely. Not only the discipline, but also the encouragement. You know, through our program, people are actually seeing their balances go down, and it provides that peace of mind that they are going to be able to get out of debt and stay out of debt by making good choices and being intentional.
Yeah, and that's really key. All right, Neely, let's talk about the credit score. You know, whenever we talk about debt management, there's always a few folks saying, how is this going to affect my credit score? And even though that shouldn't be our primary driver, we should be focused on getting out of debt once and for all. It is a consideration. So can you weigh in on that?
Sure. It's a great question, and a lot of people do ask it. So let's take a look at it. What's important to understand is that the program itself is not impacting your credit score. What impacts the score is closing the accounts. So on our program, the accounts that people choose to put into the plan, the creditors will close those accounts. So the impact is on closing the accounts, and it really weighs heavily on two different factors. And that is how long an account has been open, and then what their credit usage is. So if someone is closing an account that has high usage relative to the credit limit, the impact is very minor because they've already taken the hit based off the high usage and they're not shutting down much available credit. Typically, I encourage people to enroll accounts that have high balances and high APRs so they have a long-term solution. And then if it makes financial sense, to keep open the accounts that they've had the longest and work on paying down those accounts to 30% below the credit limit so that they can maximize their score. In addition, as people make payments on our program and they pay off the accounts, their credit score does improve. So clients actually leave our program with a better score than what they came in with.
Excellent. And then quickly, Neely, we've got about 90 seconds left. You mentioned this is not debt settlement or debt consolidation, which we don't endorse. Why is debt management better?
Well, first off, you don't want to create more debt by opening up a consolidation loan, because frequently people end up spending more money and creating more debt because they open up the lines of credit if they do the consolidation loan. And then secondly, with debt settlement, you're not honoring your debt in full. So we want to be good stewards of our resources. And with debt settlement, it's almost as destructive as bankruptcy. There's a tax implication. The accounts go past 120 days past due, which means they're going to get charged off, which stays on your credit report for 7 years. In most states, it's an automatic lien on your home if a creditor takes you to court. And credit companies seek legal about a year, give or take, of making no payments. So credit counseling is really a better solution.
Very good. And how can folks get more information?
Sure. So you can reach out to us at 800-557-1985 or ChristianCreditCounselors.org.
Very good. Neely, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks so much. God bless.
That's Neely Simon with Christian Credit Counselors. The website again, ChristianCreditCounselors.org. We're going to pause for a brief break, but we'll be back with more MoneyWise on American Family Radio. Stick around. Thanks for joining us today on MoneyWise on American Family Radio as we apply biblical wisdom to your financial decisions and choices, recognizing money issues, well, they're heart issues. We started today by talking about money. I can't think of a better topic to think about in terms of our legacy. You know, we're raising future adults if we have kids, and as they leave the home, not only do we want them ready in terms of financial literacy, we want them ready to understand their role as a steward of God's resources and what it means to see money as a tool, not an end, and to fight against the world's messages that say your self-worth is equal to your net worth, and allow them to avoid the comparison trap. So many things that our culture can draw us into, we want to try to help keep them out of that, and we would love to come alongside you as you think about that, whether it's saving or giving, perhaps paying down debt, or your lifestyle, your spending plan. All right, let's begin today in Crown Point, Indiana. Mary, thank you for calling. Go right ahead.
Hi. I was calling because I was left a little bit of money from my mom when she passed, and I have three grandchildren, and I would like to open them some kind of a savings, not actually a savings, I'd like to open them an IRA. Now, yeah. Two of them are in college and the other's in high school. And I told them if I open this, it's you're just to put money in and never take it out. But I wanted to know if that's a good way to start them out, or should I do it with some other type of saving plan or something like that?
Yeah, well, I think the key is to define what the purpose of this money is. Let's first tackle whether or not you're even able to put the money into an IRA for kids. You are, to the extent they have earned income. So they would have to have jobs, and you could only put in money up to the limit. So that's the contribution limit for the year, which happens to be $6,000 for this year. And then it's only up to the earned income that they have until you reach that $6,000 cap. So do they all have jobs?
They're in college and they have jobs in the college, but I don't know if that's to help pay for their college or if it's their money.
Well, it doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't really matter what they use it for. It's really in terms of the ability to contribute to an IRA in their name. It's really only up to the amount of earned income that they have that would be subject to taxes. Now, they may not pay any taxes because they may be below the standard deduction. But if they have earned income, they would be able to contribute, or you could on their behalf, into an IRA in their name. But if they don't have jobs, or they're only earning a few hundred dollars, then you could only contribute up to the amount of earned income that they have. Beyond that, I think we need to back up and decide what's the purpose of this money. Is it specifically for college? Obviously, for the ones that are in college, that's probably already taken care of. Is it for kind of the near term to be able to use to buy a car or put a first, last, and security on an apartment? Or is it, money that you truly want them to sock away for the future, as in 40 years down the road for retirement? And I fully believe that this is a great use of the money if that was something you wanted to do for them and they had that earned income allowing them to make that contribution, or to you to do it into their custodial IRA. That would be great. There's nothing more powerful than the power of compounding over a long period of time, and this would certainly get them going toward retirement savings. But give me your thoughts on just how you want the money to be used.
Because I was fortunate to get a job where I was able to, make some money and put some into, I got a pension and a 401k. But my thought was with the IRA that it would be their savings for their older age. I was kind of helping them start that because I'm not sure where they're going to end up with jobs, if they're going to have that. And I told them, if you contribute to that, it'll always be for your money when you need it when you're older.
Yes.
So I'm encouraging them to start that now when they're 18 and 19.
Yes.
And start saving in there.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, so I think if that's really your heart's desire, and that is to encourage the long-term systematic savings, you know, for retirement, to begin that now, to begin to realize the power of that compounding over a long period of time, that's a great thing to do. And it's going to come down to opening an account. So basically the way you do that is you have to have an adult custodian account. So there'd be an adult on it. That could be you or their parents. And then they would be the custodian, or they would be, you would be the custodian, but then they would be named on it as well. It becomes their account solely when they reach the age of majority, which is 18 in most states. So there's no minimum age, but there is that requirement that it can only be up to the limit, which is $6,000 for this year, and only up to the amount of earned income that they have. So depending on how much they're working, how much they've earned, they may or may not be able to put in, or you on their behalf, the full $6,000. And then you'd have to decide where. Not every custodian offers custodial IRAs, but in particular, Fidelity and Charles Schwab do. And both of those are known as low-cost providers that would be great options for you. So you would go open those custodial IRAs, and then you could make that contribution up to the earned income that they have for the year, no more than $6,000. Does that make sense?
Oh, it does make sense. Thank you so much. I just want to make sure it was a real sound idea and that I could do that for them. That's what I was
going to absolutely. Yes. Yep.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. I love
all right.
The show. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. God bless you very much. Also coming up today, you know, have you thought about the fact that we were wired for impact? You know, we're hardwired for worship. And, you know, as we think about our purpose, we're wired for impact as well, an impact beyond ourselves. Well, what does that look like in terms of the financial decisions that you're making? Well, I think you can make a difference in your giving and your investing and in your living. We'll talk about that today. Plus, I'll tackle a question that came in by email, specifically related to a spouse that doesn't have any credit because her husband, everything's in his name. She's concerned that she wasn't even able to qualify for a credit card. I'll give you my thoughts on how to overcome that. So stay right there and we'll be right back with more MoneyWise on American Family Radio. Thanks for joining us today on MoneyWise on American Family Radio as we apply biblical wisdom to your financial decisions and choices. All right, we've got some great questions stacked up here today, so let's make our way through next to Lakeland, Florida. Hey, Carol, thanks for calling. Go right ahead.
Hello, thanks for taking my call. I'm calling on behalf of my friend. I'm looking for any ideas for her. A little over a year ago, she was independent. And then she lost her job due to child custody strange schedule, that nobody would hire her with that schedule. For the last year, she's had government housing assistance, but that's ending. She has to pay full rent this next month. She's got no more unemployment. If she moves, she will probably lose her custody cases, but she doesn't have a job, so she can't pay for her housing. She's looking for a night job from home that would pay a living. She tried about every assistance organization she can find, and I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts on what she can do.
Yeah. Well, it's so challenging in this situation, and I'm so delighted to hear that you're being a friend to her, because I think, you know, obviously somebody in this situation needs somebody walking alongside them. As it's often said, you really want to be able to think about doing for one, which you wish you could do for everyone. And I think in this case, you know, just being a friend to this person is really helpful and helping them navigate the assistance that may be available. Does she have a local church, Carol, that she's a part of?
Yes, she sometimes. They have helped her all that they can, and that sort of dried up. She spends every day looking for jobs and resources.
Yeah, Yeah. Well, I think staying connected to her local church, I think one of the keys is that she's demonstrating a desire to be part of the solution here and, you know, making her full-time job trying to find assistance. You know, I think, you know, beyond that, I would check into the church, perhaps knowing a listing of the available community resources that are there, because not only can they be an assistance to her directly, and as you said, they already have, and perhaps there's a limit to that. I know that in many cases, they can connect her to local counsel and aid that may be available there locally, you know, housing allowance and, you know, other types of things that she might be able to take advantage of. You know, it's really going to come down to social services, you know, local ministries or outreach organizations that can meet her needs there on the ground, and then, you know, the local body of Christ. And I think, you know, as we ask the Lord to give you some wisdom here and help her navigate this, plus her desire, you know, to get out and work. And the good news is this is a really attractive job market right now. I mean, the labor market is still very strong. There's a lot of people who are still looking for, you know, folks to provide, you know, to take jobs that they have open. And so it's not like, you know, we're in a challenging job market right now. And I realize there's limitations with her kids and so forth as to what she can do, but there should be plenty of options. So I think between all of these and then ultimately our trust in the Lord as her provider, I'm confident something will come her way. Let me just ask the Lord to be in the midst of this, if you don't mind, Carol. We just lift up Carol's friend to you, Lord. You know the situation. You know every detail as her creator. Lord, we just ask that you would intervene here miraculously, that you'd provide employment, that you'd rally around her people like Carol and others that can meet needs, that you'd give her wisdom and endurance during a challenging season, that this wouldn't cause her to wane in her faith at all, but she would lean into her relationship with you, knowing that she can trust you and your promises are real. Be near to those kids in this difficult time, given what she has in front of her. And Lord, we're just going to tell you today that we trust you and invite you into every facet of this situation, including the finances of Carol's friend. And we ask all this in Christ's name. Amen. Carol, thank you for your call today. Please keep us posted on this situation. To Des Moines, Iowa, Anita, thank you for calling. Go right ahead.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I'm curious. I have a thrift savings account where I put my money in biweekly from my employer, and they match me 3%. Right now, I'm giving 8% of my money, and I'm trying to see if it would be wise to just go with the 3% and have them match that, and then put that other 5% in a different savings or retirement account.
Sure. What is your age, Anita, if you don't mind me asking?
52.
52. Okay. Yeah, I mean, absolutely, you want to take advantage of the match. Beyond that, I like you continuing to contribute to the TSP. The only thing I might offer would be if you want to open a Roth IRA in addition to the TSP, what you could do is do the first 3% to get the full match, then contribute up to the full amount in the Roth IRA, which is going to be after-tax money that will grow tax-free, and you could do that over age 50. It's up to $7,000. This year. And then if there's anything left, perhaps you come back to the TSP and you know, put in as much as you can. I think the key is that it's either going into a tax deferred environment where you're getting tax deferred growth, so the taxes aren't weighing on the investments, you can maximize the growth over time, or in a tax free growth environment like the Roth. Either one of those are great. And my priority would be match first, then Roth, then back to the you know, additional contributions into the TSP. So that would be the only other thing I might consider other than what you're currently doing. But if for simplicity's sake, you'd rather just, you know, put the full 8% into the TSP, I don't have any problem with that. The only other thing I would just say is make sure that the investments that you're selecting inside the TSP are the best ones for your age and risk tolerance. You know, perhaps if you have some insight into that, great. If you don't, maybe ask somebody for some help there just to make sure you're picking the right investments. Not that we know what they're going to do, but that they're the right mix of investments for what you're trying to accomplish. Does that all make sense?
It does. It does. So someone had told me that I should just take it out and put it in the bank, but I'm not so sure that I trust the banks to hold on to my money either. So it's,
well,
I guess,
yeah, I certainly wouldn't do that. You know, in terms of taking the money out of the TSP, you're going to create a taxable event plus the penalty, and then it's not available for it to be growing or compounding for the future. You know, the other problem is in the bank, it's losing purchasing power every day. I mean, inflation's running north of 8% right now. So you're losing 8% purchasing power every year on that money, and it doesn't even have the ability to grow. Now, I realize we're in a volatile market right now, but the market works in cycles, and it will recover ahead of this economy. We have some longer-term challenges in this country, but in my view, there's nothing on the horizon that would cause us not to continue to be the most dominant economic force in the world in terms of the size of our economy. We will get through, even if we slip into a recession, I think it'll be minor. The market will recover ahead of it, and we'll move to higher ground. So the very best way, in my view, for you to build wealth, Anita, over the next, you know, 15 years, let's say, until you retire, and then if you're in good health and the Lord tarries, you need that money to last several decades beyond retirement age. The very best way to maximize that is a properly diversified stock and bond portfolio where taxes are not putting a drag on the investments, and that's exactly where you're at right now in the TSP. So I would say continue to be faithful and systematic in your contributions of that 8% a year, and it'll pay off over the long haul. Hey, we appreciate your call today. We're going to pause for a brief break, but we'll be back with more MoneyWise on American Family Radio. Stick around. Thanks for joining us today on MoneyWise on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West, your host. We're thrilled you're here today. This is where we apply God's wisdom to your financial decisions and choices. Let's quickly go to Tampa, Florida. Fred, thanks for calling, sir. Go right ahead.
Yeah, so I'm in a catch-22. I'm stuck in a timeshare that I can't get out. I'm paying the principal and mortgage, but cannot do the maintenance, which means that I will never be able to use it unless I'm able to catch up with maintenance. Any suggestions?
Well, first suggestion is, Fred, to let this be encouragement for everybody else listening to be very careful before getting into a timeshare. I can't tell you how many calls I've gotten exactly like this one, and I don't mean to make light of it because I know it's frustrating and it's a difficult situation. There aren't great options here. You know, one is there's a forum online called Tug2. It's the Timeshare Users Group, but you'll find it on the web at TUG and the number 2.com. That is a place you could list this for sale. The challenge is there's more people that want to get rid of these than buy them. So it's not always easy to get rid of them, but you could check that. Second, you could check your contract. I'm sure you've already done this, but you know, you could see what options you have there. You could see if the company will buy it back. They likely won't. They want to be in the business of selling new timeshares to other folks. They don't want to buy them back. But you could also see if they'd take it back for free. You could try to sell it, you know, in the newspaper or, you know, online. But I think the Tug2 website would be your best bet there. You could try to find one of these exit companies. I've never had great success with the exit companies, but I know there's several of them that are promoted on various places. So you could do some due diligence there. I wouldn't want to make a recommendation to one because, again, I've never found them to be, you know, terribly successful. And then the other option would be, can you give it away to somebody who'd be willing to just take it off your hands? If they'll use it and take the, you know, start paying the maintenance, obviously, then they could get something that could be really a win-win for both of you. But unfortunately, there's not a silver bullet here, Fred. You're going to need to do your homework. But I'd start with Tug2, see if you can give it back to the company, and then see if you can give it away to somebody who might be willing to take on the maintenance. Wish you all the best in this, Fred, and let us know how it turns out. To Tennessee, Matt, thanks for calling. Go right ahead.
Hey, I've got a question about, we had a business meeting on Sunday, and our church has somewhere around about $30,000 or so just in a general fund, and they were asking about investing some of that, and I was wondering if you had any ideas on that one.
Well, is it legal? Yes. Is it advisable? No. In my view, I wouldn't want to see a church invest its capital. You know, what I would say is, and I've served on finance committees on the church, at the church over the years, and, you know, we always had a policy that basically established the target for our reserves. And I think somewhere between 3 to 12 months worth of reserves is prudent. And that's beyond what the mortgage may require as reserves, just for operating reserves. But I think anything beyond 12 months is excessive. And I think the key is that, you know, God's people are giving to the church to fund the work of the church, which is to reach the lost and build up the body. And, you know, the extent to which we're taking risk with those funds and not deploying it into ministry is just something that I really don't get excited about at all. So, you know, obviously putting the reserves to work in a way that protects the capital and earns a decent interest rate on it, as long as it's fully, you know, secure, I think is an option. But anything beyond that with marketable securities, no, not in my view. And I would say if you receive gifts of stock or real estate, I would immediately initiate a sale at that time. That's just my view. It doesn't mean it's right or wrong. I just, you know, I wouldn't be able to get comfortable as a lay leader in a church that we're taking the gifts that were given to the church for the purposes of ministry and putting them to work in the stock market. Is that helpful? All right, I think we lost him. Hopefully that was helpful. If he has any follow-up thoughts, I'd encourage him to give us a call back. Kelly in Florida, go right ahead. You're on MoneyWise Live.
Hey, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. So sure. I'm a young man of 52 years old, have not put a whole bunch of money away for my retirement, but I have some cash flow, about $100,000 that I'm about to come into. So I wanted to find out about either getting involved in some type of compound interest, or what other suggestion would you have as far as investing for my retirement?
Yeah. Do you have a company-sponsored plan at work, Kelly?
Well, I work for myself. I own my own business.
Okay. All right. Great. And do you have a retirement account that you've opened that you just haven't put a whole lot in, or you don't even have an account created?
I haven't created an account. I've been putting some money away, but not a whole lot.
What type of account is it?
It's just a regular bank account, you know.
Okay, got it. Yeah. Well, what I would do is I would open a SEP IRA to start with. This is a very effective tool for self-employed individuals. That stands for Simplified Employee Pension Plan. And, you know, it's a great way to get a significant amount of money into a plan on a tax-deferred basis. You can put in up to $61,000, and there's some limitations on that in terms of, you know, there's a personal limit, and then there's the employee contribution, then there's their, what's considered the employer contribution, even though, you know, they're both your money. And, you know, it's a great way to get a good bit of money, you know, going in on a tax-deferred basis. So for you, in terms of thinking about that $100,000, if you don't have an emergency fund of 3 to 6 months expenses, and I'd probably err more toward the 6 months as a self-employed person, then I would say take that portion of what is equivalent to 6 months worth of your household expenses, and I'd put that into a high yield savings account online with like Marcus or Ally Bank, one of those earning 1.5% a year, but with total safety, and then link it to your checking account, and that's for emergencies. And then whatever's left, I'd say let's try to get as much of that going in on a tax-deferred basis as possible, and that's where the SEP IRA will come in terms of you being able to make some contributions to get that money going in, and then you invest that for your future, and then keep up those contributions, you know, by limiting your lifestyle, and as you have profitable years where you have some excess, you know, you can sock some more away. And you can open that at Schwab or Fidelity. Any number of institutions will allow you to do that. But this would be a great tool for you to be able to get some money going, okay?
All right, that's excellent. And by the way, just a little resource for the young lady who called, Carol. If she checks with her local career source, that's part of my ministry that I do. I put on a lot of career fairs here in Broward County. So if she checks with her local career source, there's a lot of resources to help her with employment.
Yeah, great. Well, I appreciate that. That's great counsel. I hope she's still listening. Thanks for calling, Kelly. To Illinois, Susan, you're next on the program. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm 65 this year. Read Larry Burkett when I was 20. I've stayed out of debt. So I raised five children after 20 years marriage, divorced 20 years. Took care of them. I have an emergency fund established. I rent, but my rent went up $320. My oldest child, who lives out of state, him and his wife want to buy a property here to stabilize my rent as I'm going into retirement. I am planning on continuing to work. I told them, I think, you know, they make good money, but I don't think they have, they have four children, but they don't have a college fund established for their children, and their home is not paid for. They're not completely out of debt. So I feel like they need to establish their own, those things before they try to help me.
Yeah. Yeah, and so you're just wondering how to navigate that with them?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is tough because obviously, I mean, I think if it were me, Susan, what I would do would be just to approach them with that same heart, you know, sentiment that you just expressed to me and just say, listen, I love that you guys want to help me. And here's my thought. You know, I think I want you all to make sure that you're doing what you need to do for your own financial future first. And I love you and I appreciate your desire to help. But that's, you know, what my concern is. And at the end of the day, Susan, if they just decide, listen, the Lord has impressed upon us to give to you and to help in this way, I think that's great. And I would allow them to do that. I mean, obviously, it's something that they have a burden for. I think as long as you've made your desire known, then given them permission to say, as much as I can use your help, I really want you guys to focus on yourselves. I think you'll come to the right conclusion where either you say, you know what, I'm just going to be willing to receive this and be grateful for it and know that that's going to bless them in doing that. Or they might say, you know what, we really appreciate that and we'll take that counsel and go, you know, put that money to work. And, you know, that'll make you feel good as well. But I think the key is just open and honest communication here and an understanding that, you know, at the end of the day, this may be something that really just gives them a lot of joy to be able to do. So let us know how that turns out, Susan. Be prayed up. Ask the Lord to intervene as you have that conversation. And I would love to hear how it turns out. God bless you very much. Well, folks, we've covered a lot of ground today, a lot of great questions, running the gamut of financial decisions and choices. It's such a privilege to be able to come alongside you each day as we talk about how we can each be found faithful in serving the Lord and being a good steward of His resources. I want to say thanks to my team today, Jim Henry, Devin Patrick. Grateful for Pat Montague as well. Thank you for being here. We look forward to seeing you on Monday. In the meantime, have a great weekend. May God bless you. Bye-bye.